Good morning. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. We continue to present our show an hour earlier than usual as we move things a bit to provide live coverage from NPR of the impeachment trial in the United States Senate. Today's coverage scheduled to begin at noon, and we'll stay with NPR for the duration of this seventh day of the proceedings. Ahead on our program today, the militant grammarian Catherine Sherrills is back. This morning, she considers many of the words and phrases we connect to sleep. Our visit with her in our second half hour. You can also listen to Ozarks at Large on your schedule. We're available as a podcast through many services, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and others. Our podcasts are absolutely free. You can also tell your smart speaker to play the Ozarks at Large podcast, and complete shows, as well as individual stories and interviews, can be found at ozarksatlarge.com. Also at our website, links so you can easily share something you enjoyed by mail or on social media. Tomorrow is National Puzzle Day, and Fort Smith Library's Dallas branch will celebrate with several group jigsaw puzzle activities. This is a free, all-ages, all-day event. And a gentle reminder that as of today, you have 1 week to be sure you are registered to vote in the March 3rd Arkansas primary. The deadline to be registered to cast a ballot in the primary is Tuesday, February 4th. Your local county clerk can provide you more information. This is Ozarks at Large. Protesters are calling on the Washington County Sheriff's Office to stop participating in the 287G program, which is operated by United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement. This comes on the heels of the arrest and potential deportation of a local artist. According to ICE, 287G creates partnerships with state and local law enforcement agencies to identify and remove undocumented immigrants. The decision about whether to participate in the program is made by the sheriff. In this case, Sheriff Tim Helder. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek about why his sheriff's office takes part in 287G, the arrest of Alan Rodriguez, and the protests that have ensued.
Since the start of the year, there have been two protests against Washington County's voluntary participation in the 287G program. The most recent one took place at last week's Fayetteville City Council meeting.
Why do we want it?
N287G.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
N287G.
When do we want it?
Now.
In a video of the meeting on the city's website, a group of protesters in bandanas and hoodies interrupts a discussion about the cultural arts corridor. While they chant, they're also holding signs that read, "Fayetteville deports artists of color." Eventually, the protesters are escorted out by police. Washington County Sheriff Tim Helder says he's grateful that's all that happened.
I fear that, you know, that could have gone south in a hurry. It could have been bad because with everything that's happening nationally with public shootings and in public meetings and schools and churches, I think we're all very fortunate that Mike Reynolds, almost immediately, the chief at Fayetteville, recognized the voice and one of the individuals that was masked. Had he not, that could have gone in a whole different direction, because I think our initial thought would have been this is probably a violent act getting ready to happen. So I hate that they've taken it this far, but I don't think we've seen the end of it.
Another protest took place outside the sheriff's office several days earlier. Helder says it was peaceful, and he has no problem with people exercising their freedom of speech.
We certainly respect that right until they're violating another law, you know, and then we'll have to take action in that area. But I think it all worked out. They were able to make a meaningful statement in their minds about their opposition to 287G, their opposition to closed borders, their opposition to the specific arrest and deportation of this individual.
This individual is 24-year-old Alan Rodriguez. He was arrested on September 19th after being accused of spray-painting walls and tunnels at Gordon Long Park. Helder says Rodriguez was eventually charged with felony criminal mischief and misdemeanor public intoxication.
So he was in our facility awaiting trial for those charges. In the meantime, it had been determined that he was also undocumented. I think I don't have all the details on exactly what all transpired there, but I think he had been DACA and had let that expire, had not renewed. So technically, he was here illegally. And so that was determined, and immigration folks put a detainer on him.
According to a statement from ICE, the agency requested an immigration detainer on Rodriguez on September 20th and took custody of him on January 15th when he was released from the Washington County Jail after 4 months.
The charges that had been filed, the state charges, had not yet been adjudicated. So he was pretrial, awaiting his day in court. And then in the meantime, and I don't know who did this or who satisfied, but anyway, a deal was worked out with the city that restitution would be paid, and a deal was worked out with the prosecutor that if restitution was paid, that he would then drop the charges. All of that happened. Then the detainer, the hold, kicked in, and then ICE came to pick him up.
Although the charges against Rodriguez were dropped when he paid $1,600 in restitution, the ICE detainer allowed the sheriff's office to hold him for up to an additional 48 hours. That gives ICE time to pick up undocumented immigrants who've been released from local custody. Helder says the agency routinely stops by the detention center twice a week with a transport bus. In Rodriguez's case, he was transferred into ICE custody on January 17th as protesters chanted outside the jail and blocked the bus. You can hear them in this video shared on Facebook. Rodriguez is now at a detention facility in Louisiana, pending removal proceedings in federal immigration court. Helder says the Washington County Sheriff's Office has had a memorandum of understanding with ICE since 2007.
The deputies that are cross-trained, once they're notified that there's a potential, they do background checks and investigation based on their training and whatnot. And if they get to a point where they make a determination that in all likelihood that person that committed a crime may also be in the country illegally, then they forward that information and make notification to ICE.
ICE then conducts its own investigation and determines whether a detainer is warranted. Helder says because of concerns expressed by the community, the sheriff's office has started publishing monthly reports on the inmates who are flagged under 287G.
We started publishing what the actual charges were, the original arrests on the people that were at least looked into.
For example, in September, the same month Alan Rodriguez was arrested and placed on a detainer, the sheriff's office referred 49 cases to ICE. Of those, 21 were placed on a hold and 28 were not. Charges ranged from rape and aggravated assault to driving while intoxicated.
The detention model, which is what we're still participating in, has stood the test of time. And I think it's the reason it has stayed the course is because we do it right. We're audited every year. We've been named as a model agency, you know, for others to look at as to how we do things. But beyond that, it's, to me, it's a blind taste test.
Here's what Sheriff Helder means by that.
Every one of the 13,000 plus people that are booked in every year are asked the same list of questions on a questionnaire. And through that questionnaire, then if there are flags that come up or multiple criteria, then they're looked at.
According to the reports compiled by the sheriff's office, those who are taken into ICE custody come from all over the world, but most are from the Marshall Islands and Mexico. Helder says he anticipates their number of ICE detainers will go up now that the Springdale Police Department has closed its jail and is no longer processing misdemeanor offenses.
Now, they are working with us at great lengths to try and release, you know, book people, do all their stuff there, release them on citations. But there are a certain group of misdemeanors that can't, you know, like domestic batterers, some Class A misdemeanors that have to come. But anyway, we figure that number is going to probably be around, our best guess in working with Chief Peters is 1,500 to 1,800 a year. But what I anticipate happening is there will be an uptick in the people that are either holds are placed on or they're looked at because of their immigration status. Because, as you know, that the major concentration in Washington County of our immigrant population is in Springdale.
Washington, Benton, and Craighead County Sheriff's Offices are the three law enforcement agencies in Arkansas that participate in the 287G program. And of the nearly 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the country, 89 have MOUs with ICE. Helder says he believes the 287G jail enforcement model is a better way of carrying out the law than some of the other ways he's seen it done during his 41-year career in law enforcement.
I grew up in a system, you know, 35 years ago as a patrolman where we would get called in to go do workplace enforcement to help ICE. And I didn't like that. I mean, I honestly, it made me very uncomfortable when people were trying to support their family and they weren't doing anything to break the law other than coming across undocumented. So whenever I had the opportunity to address this issue, 287G came up on the horizon.
And Helder says the 287G program includes another component that makes it more effective from both a public safety and law enforcement perspective.
We're identifying people that, first of all, have come into the country illegally for whatever reason, and I can understand a lot of the reasons. But there's a second component here. They've broken another law that's caused them to come to jail.
Which is part of the reason Helder says the sheriff's office has renewed its MOU with ICE every year for the last 13 years.
You know, my heart hurts in a lot of ways for this, but I think whenever I look at why have we stayed the course, it's because it's a law and order issue. And I can't get into all the social stuff in my position. Now, there may come a time, I reevaluate every year, and I have conversations with my chief and my staff periodically. Are we staying the course? Are we still doing right? And the answer generally comes back, and almost always, is it's never easy to do the right thing, and we still believe this is the right thing to do.
The protesters who have come out in Alan Rodriguez's defense don't see it that way. They point out Rodriguez came to the U.S. more than 20 years ago when he was a child. He'd been granted deferred action for childhood arrivals and was in the process of renewing that status when he was arrested. The protesters say he's a valued member of the community who has been teaching and mentoring young artists since he graduated from Fayetteville High School in 2013. Helder says he can understand where they're coming from, but deputies can't pick and choose who is investigated under 287G once someone is booked into jail.
I think if you break it all down, reality is people that are vehemently opposed to this program, it's a bigger issue. You know, they want reform, and I do too. I would like for it to be cleared up. I think our dreamers, our DACA, our children are being impacted. But people that come into this country and refuse to obey the laws of the land, I think we have to have a mechanism to get them displaced. And I also don't believe in open borders. And I think if you break it down, I think that's what the people that are really demonstrating want. And that is just Katie, bar the door, no rules, and let's go. I can't live in that world. I mean, mine is one of rules and laws, and I'll restate the obvious.
A Washington County judge set Rodriguez's bond on the criminal mischief and public intoxication charges at $1,500 shortly after he was arrested. A family representative says they decided not to pay his bail because it would have triggered the 48-hour ICE detainer, and Rodriguez would have been transferred to an immigration detention center much sooner. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
The rules and results of current immigration policy may be viewed through many lenses. The unfolding case of Alan Rodriguez is touching many in the community, including Veronica Razo, Alan Rodriguez's mother. She says since her son has been transported by federal immigration and customs enforcement personnel to Louisiana, she's been able to lean on family, friends, and supporters. But mostly, she says, she's leaning on faith.
That's the only thing I have right now, and a lot of support for the group. But, you know, it's just like, I feel like I'm tied up. You know, you cannot do much.
Veronica came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio last week, along with family friend Florencio Medeiros. Florencio is also part of the group Equipo de Defensa, a group that advocates for immigration policy reform. When Veronica came to our studio last Wednesday, she told us she had been able to talk to her son briefly 2 days prior to our conversation.
He sounds like he's okay, because I know that he don't want me to worry too much. But he said, I'm going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. But, you know, still, even when he got caught, he told me, you know what, you don't have to pay anything for me. Just leave me here because I deserve it and all that. So, you know, I cannot do that.
She says the message he was spray painting in the park tunnel when he was arrested was, Love yourself, Fayetteville. But Veronica says neither she nor her son make excuses for the initial action that started this ordeal. She says she taught all four of her sons that if you make a mistake or get in trouble, you have to accept the consequences. To that end, she says Alan paid restitution for the material damage done and charges were dropped. They hoped the matter would be over then. She says Alan's life in Northwest Arkansas began when she and her then husband moved to Springdale when Alan was about 1.5 years old. She says the family then moved to Fayetteville, and that's when her son began showing an interest in art.
When he was in Jefferson School, he always liked to, draw and something. And then we moved to a mobile home, and, you know, he started, painting my walls. And I just, the first time I said, nah, it's fine, you know. And then he's making one room, they make it this a big, big painting thing, and I said, okay, so I just put more pictures on the top and I don't worry about it. But since then he said, you know, I never put him don't do that, because I was thinking, you know, sometimes they had to express or something.
Since the arrest last fall, and especially since Alan Rodriguez was taken by ICE from Washington County to Louisiana, Veronica says it's been difficult to communicate with her son.
He gave me a number. He called me for one number. 1-800 for over there. Mm-hmm. And then we call because we had to set up an account with him so we can deposit money so he can call me. And they don't give you much information. You know, say, well, you had to wait until he got in the system. And I said, but you already have him over there. Can you give me another number? Well, call to this number. If they don't help you, let me know. And it's still you know.
She says Alan had qualified for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, but his initial approval had expired. The Obama administration-era program allows for applications after a 2-year approval period ends. She says her son had reapplied, but she says now the family is in limbo. She says her ex-husband left about 12 years ago, and she's concerned that, worst-case scenario, Alan will be deported to a home he doesn't remember, a home from a time in his life before he was a toddler.
He needs to go to where my ex is, and he is not good. He's not good at all. That's the scary part for me, the most scary part right now, because he's not good.
For many arrested for felony criminal mischief who pay restitution and have charges dropped, the legal balance of the troubles are over then. But for people without documentation, there can be more. And agree or disagree with current immigration policy or a county's decision to participate in 287G, living without documentation in the United States has risks. Florencio Madero's, a family friend who accompanied Veronica to our studio for the interview last week, says he wants people to consider the bigger picture, that there are people who have come to the United States seeking protection from dangerous situations that he says have origins to U.S. policies toward countries in Central America.
U.S. foreign policy destabilizes the political and economic situation in a country that creates violence, that creates stability. Honduras right now is one of the most dangerous countries. So through U.S. foreign policy and NAFTA did create hurt workers both in the U.S. and in Mexico. So those are the consequences of U.S. foreign policy, and we migrate to the U.S. because of those resources that from our home countries that are coming back to the U.S. So in a sense, we're following the resources and the wealth that's extracted from our home countries to come to the U.S. So those are the consequences here, and I think U.S. Policy needs to take that into account and allow the refugees, economic refugees, and refugees of violence to be able to have an easy process to be able to come here.
Florencio and Veronica say it's difficult for people who don't live without documentation to understand the challenges such a life can present, from driving to working. But Veronica says despite those challenges, Fayetteville and Northwest Arkansas are home for her. And she says she hopes again soon for her son. She says she's like many people here. She doesn't want to leave. But she says it can be at times an uneasy existence.
It's very scary for many people, like Hispanic ones. And another people says, you know, why we had to stay here when all this is happening. And for me, I just say, you know what? Sometimes I prefer to stay here, scared, than go back to where I'm from. With no, for me, it's like a, for me, I don't even want to back with if I die. I want to stay here.
Veronica Rosso and Florencio Madero spoke with us at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week. This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973 with backcountry and urban footwear, clothing, and more. Dedicated to conservation and business waste reduction, packratoc.com or 521-6340. Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues the 65th season February 1st at Walton Arts Center. Sona musicians and special guest soloists perform the season's second Masterworks concert featuring Carl Orff's masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
The impeachment trial of President Trump continues in the United States Senate later today. The president's defense team will continue their presentations before the Senate. The trial is, not surprisingly, the first topic of conversation this week for John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. Their conversation took place yesterday after some of the leaks from former President Trump advisor John Bolton's book became public. But not all of those leaks had happened yet. Roby asked John Brummett if he thought the leaked manuscript changes anything that might happen in the U.S. Senate today or this week. Brummett says it might present a complication.
And it is also complicated in that the White House defense team has sat on the Senate floor in an impeachment proceeding that there's no quid pro quo. And yet now we know that Bolton sent the manuscript to the White House National Security Council December 31 because he was talking about things that they needed to review for whether it was classified. And now people are saying, well, they told a falsehood on the Senate floor. So there are a lot of things for Mitch and the folks to get around and figure out what they're going to say and how they're going to handle this. I guess now there will be witnesses, I guess. I don't know.
I think that's a big gamble.
But
still,
if there were three or maybe four thinking so before, maybe there'll be, well, maybe. But if somebody just now said, we really don't need the witnesses anymore. We know what happened. We got to have Bolton's essential testimony. But, and even if the plan had been, this is so weird. The plan, I think, had been if they had to call Bolton as a witness to depose him privately and then classify anything that was troubling. All that's out there now. Impeachment is going to come out the same way. Politics are going to largely play out the same way because people's minds are made up. But the general precariousness of the Republican position on this matter, to simply hear no evil, see no evil, is really complicated right now.
Yeah. Could have some ramifications in some of the tough re-election
races. Yeah, that's
races.
What this is all about. Mm-hmm. I've tried to say, this is about the political effect later. And where Trump is concerned, I think he is so polarizing that it's a factor, but not a major factor. There's so much to come in the campaign. But there are Republican senators up for re-election in swing districts, and they don't need this, and that's what all the hand-wringing is about. So it's a major development that will not have clear major consequence in the short term.
You spoke to the Hot Springs Village Democratic Party?
Democratic club in the state, yeah. They tell me, which says more about the state than Hot Springs Village. Well, they had a nice crowd. There are some there.
Tell me what was your message? What did you deliver?
Basically, I said the real speaker here tonight is the other speaker, David Couch. He's the man behind all of the initiative acts, the things that citizens' initiatives, and that's how we get things done anymore in Arkansas. And I tied it into the fact that Bernie is leading in one poll on the Democratic side, and Trump is the Republican president. When Bernie's not a real Democrat, Trump wasn't a real Republican, and the parties have never been weaker, while partisanship, meaning hatred of the other side, has never been greater. And I built a speech on that basis.
Yeah. And it was also kind of the foundation for your column on Sunday to talk about.
I wrote
about
that Sunday. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. The party is, I think it's the most profound thing that's been, and I didn't say it originally, I wish I had, that I, about our modern political condition. The party, political parties have never been weaker, but partisanship has never been greater. The point is very little gets done, and I closed the speech and the column by saying there's one institution left that is effective at thwarting the will of the people. That's the Electoral College. Because we now have in this century, and within 20 years, two second place presidents in the popular vote going into the White House based on the Electoral College. It might surprise you to know that of all the things I said in that column and all the things I said in that address, that's the most pushback I got.
Really?
People saying, you want people in California to decide our president. I just want them to have as much power in their individual vote, one man, one vote, supposedly a principle, as we do. You want, my rejoinder is, you want people in Arkansas and red states without many people to pick the president. Anyway, that's a big to-do whenever I bring
something
that up.
Something that you'll hear more about.
Yeah.
This is a good segue into a retro piece that you have written for us about what has happened in the last decade in Arkansas politics. It's coming out in our State of the State magazine, hitting mailboxes this week.
It's now in the mail, you say?
It is in the mail.
Good. Just like
maybe,
the check.
Maybe you'll have one in your mailbox when you go home at
lunch. I don't think
today,
I'm on your mailing list, but I hope so.
Give everybody a perspective of what it was that you kind of outlined. We started the 2010s with Mike Beebe and a lot of Republican gains. By the end of the, it didn't even take halfway through the decade to get Republican majorities. We are at a place now where there are Republican supermajorities.
Yeah. The concept, I should say, was yours. You used to do this piece for
us. You do the writing.
Well, yeah, but I did the writing. Others did the thinking. I just did the writing. I called, the point, as you say, this decade just ended. The 20-teens were big for Arkansas, major. I call it convulsive change, which I think we could agree that it was. I talked with a very articulate and thoughtful political science professor, I think emeritus now at Wichita, Dr. Hal Bass. Never really talked with him at length before, but I thought he would be helpful on this subject. And he gave a lot of thought to his input, and he's quoted extensively about how Arkansas was populist and conservative Democrat, and it was all based in a heritage of the Depression and the New Deal and even the Civil War. But as time passes, you could see chinks in that. I mean, Ed Bethune, Frank White, Mike Huckabee, went to brought Republicans get elected, but those, we said, were like leaks in the dam, and the Democrats could always plug them with bumper.
Jay Dickey, another one. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. The Democrat Mike Ross plugged that one. Mike Beebe plugged the one after Huckabee. Bumpers plugged the one after Rockefeller. Pryor defeated Bethune. Clinton came back against White. It was always starting to happen, but the Democrats were able to plug those leaks. He said 2010 and 2014, flood. And it was a flood, and it's largely the things we know. It's Obama and resentment of his otherness, which is not just race or religion, it's just his general otherness, as it's called. And it's, a lot of things that we've all talked about, like the internet and social media and polarization. But as Dr. Bass said, this is basically, there's no political center anymore. And there's no viable plan. It's not held. And that's where Bumpers, Pryor, Clinton, though they were pretty liberal, they lived in Arkansas in the center. And it doesn't exist anymore because everybody gets their news on a nationalized basis. And then I take all of that and I talk to Governor Hutchinson about that and other things. And from that, he and I got into a little discussion of my theory that he has held back the full revolution, in my view, because he's so pragmatic, and that he has resisted cultural conservatism because he wanted to govern. He didn't want to be divisive, and he wanted to continue this moderation of our politics and modernization of our economy, and he thought real right-wing bills would set the state back. Even if that's true, he didn't want to go along with that. But because in the article, he said, hey, I did the conservative revolution. Look at our tax cuts and look at our transformation of government. He said, I just don't believe in doing needless things on either extreme. And when somebody says we need to put in a bathroom bill, I'm not seeing any bathroom problems in the state. Why do we want to go into that? And so he's saying no. Basically, he's saying, don't say that I'm a continuation of the era that included Clinton, Bumpers, Pryor, Beebe. Don't say that. Because I'm really, this is a new day of tax cuts, less regulation, pro-business, true conservative principles.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. His columns can be found in the physical paper in 12 counties in northwest and western Arkansas and at ArkansasOnline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. More from the conversation at TalkBusiness.net. Ahead today on 91.3 KUAF, in their opening statements, White House lawyers criticized both the legal grounds of the case against the president and the case itself. The president's defense team says the evidence of the case the House managers made exonerate the president. They have one more day to present their defense before questioning begins. Join us for special coverage of Day 7 of the Senate impeachment trial from NPR News, beginning at noon, right after this edition of Ozarks at Large. And ahead on Ozarks, our militant grammarian returns with a conversation all about sleep and words and phrases surrounding our slumber, like sleep tight.
In earlier times, people usually slept on mattresses supported by ropes that crossed over each other. So they're lifted off the floor.
Is that to stay away from vermin or
probably,
mud,
yeah,
or something?
I'm thinking. If these ropes were left loose, they would cause the bed to be very uncomfortable.
The Militant Grammarian and sleep still to come on today's Ozarks at Large.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. After the Seven Years' War ended in 1763, Parliament saw the American colonies as a source of much-needed money to pay for its war debt. Although some colonists accepted the new taxes and other controls, many resisted. One unpopular law was the Sugar Act of 1764, which sought to stop the smuggling of goods into and out of the colonies. It gave the British Navy greater power to search colonial ships. Naval officers used writs of assistance, or search warrants, that allowed them to board colonial ships. The law also required products such as tobacco, sugar, and timber to be shipped directly from the colonies to Britain. The law set taxes on cloth, sugar, coffee, and wine coming into the colonies. 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
And the theme to 60 Second Civics is written and performed by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find her online at cbemusic.com. That song is Complacent, which you can find on Apple Music along with all of her music. This is Ozarks at Large. During the winter months, trees become barren as their leaves fall, but it doesn't make them any less majestic. In fact, some trees are even more striking because you can see just how large their trunks and roots are. One such tree, a large elm, on the campus of Washington Regional Medical Center. It's been designated an amazing tree by the city of Fayetteville, and officials hosted a ceremony celebrating the honor in late fall. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Elder Elm is located just outside the north entrance of Washington Regional's Women and Infants Center. Mayor Lionel Jordan says building around the tree is just one step the medical center has taken to support the growth of trees on its campus.
The billing office planted over 200 trees. Yes?
Yes.
And then the cancer support housing used the woodlands setting to help visitors reduce their stress. Washington Regional Medical Center has shown an understanding that the natural environments help heal patients, calm staff in a stressful environment, and promote great environmental stewardship.
The Amazing Trees of Fayetteville program brings awareness to the importance of the urban forest by recognizing trees with amazing characteristics like being large, uniquely shaped, or a rare species in the area. John Scott, an urban forester for the city, says this elm is the second tree to receive the Amazing Tree designation.
The first one is the tree in Wilson Park, and it's a Bodark tree or horse apple, or there's so many names for it, but yeah, it's right by the basketball courts, and there's a plaque on this one, that one as well.
Each year, the city's Urban Forestry Advisory Board and on-staff urban foresters select one tree to honor, and this year, Scott says they had several nominations.
The two cedars in front of the Walker Stone, which are still future candidates, And then we had one over by Panera Bread. There's a large sycamore by Panera Bread that we really appreciate that's also a candidate for future designation. So, but we thought this one here at Washington Regional definitely needed to be recognized because it's so special and fantastic. It's just enormous.
The elm tree is 75 feet tall with a trunk circumference of 16 feet 7 inches. The canopy shades about 9,500 square feet. That's a little more than the size of two basketball courts. The tree is estimated to be 250 to 300 years old, which means it likely survived an outbreak of Dutch elm disease in the 20th century. According to the University of Arkansas Cooperative Extension Service, the disease reached Arkansas in the 1960s. It kills about 95% of the elms in an area when it first strikes and kills the remaining elms during the next few decades.
There was a massive outbreak. We lost all the elm trees throughout the United States. At one time, College Avenue was covered, and it created like an arcway all the way down 71 or College Avenue. And all those trees were wiped out during the Dutch elm disease.
While many of the larger trees in town do not get special care, Scott says this one does.
They have hired a arborist to take care of it because it is so significant and special to the hospital. It witnesses a lot of events that are personal and private coming in and out. And trees, you know, there's a lot of research saying there's a lot of power for trees and green to heal people and be part of that healing process.
A plaque has been placed near the tree to denote its designation as one of the amazing trees of Fayetteville. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And tomorrow on Ozarks, in Arkansas, dedicated volunteers rehabilitate tens of thousands of injured wild animals every year, including wild geese. And more rehabilitators are needed. That story on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. The spring 2020 session of the Bella Vista Police Department Citizens Police Academy starts March 17th. Applications are now being accepted. The 10-week program meets once per week on Tuesday evenings and allows participants an inside look at day-to-day operations of a municipal police department. The program is an attempt to inform and educate the community about issues related to law enforcement, especially local law enforcement. For more information, or if you'd like to apply, you can visit the department's website at bellavistaar.gov/BVPD.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large, and with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Catherine Shields, our militant grammarian. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right, what are we going to talk about today?
Kyle, you might be surprised at how many idioms there are about sleep.
Hmm.
A list of long-forgotten words associated with sleeping led me to the idioms, and trust me, we're going to talk about only a few of them today.
Not
there
a complete
are
list.
Many.
Okay. Well, I mean, we all do it for a third
exactly,
of our life.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. A reason to think up things to say about it. So first, some of the long forgotten words. Kyle, do you abuse the snooze button?
No, I do not. I bounce out of bed.
God, Laura must hate you in the morning.
We do have different morning personalities.
I'll bet. Yeah, yes. Most couples do. Well, those who do might be diagnosed with a condition called dyssania.
Dyssania.
D-Y, dyssania. From the 1900s, it is extreme difficulty getting out of bed in the morning.
Okay.
It isn't considered a formal condition yet, but it is a term that is still occasionally used by the medical profession, often for those who have a serious mental health condition such as depression.
Sure,
yeah,
of
so
course.
This is serious, not getting out of bed.
Right.
But even if you're not a clinical case, sometimes don't you just like to stay in bed a while?
Sure.
Well, that makes you a slug-a-bed. Isn't that a great word?
That is.
Slug-a-bed.
My dogs are slug-a-bed.
From the 16th century, it's one who stays in bed after the usual or proper time mm-hmm. to get up. Now, I have to admit, retirement and my iPad are making me a slug-a-bed. I sometimes spend 2 hours in the morning with my iPad.
Like you wake up and it's 2 hours before your feet are on the ground?
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, I'm sure you're like me and probably 99% of your listeners. Sometimes it's hard to get up because you just don't get enough sleep.
Sure.
Perhaps you suffer from the old English condition, ootcare.
Ootcare?
Ootcare, which sounds more maybe Scandinavian something. Yeah,
right. Sounds like it should have an umlaut.
Yeah, yeah. It's spelled weirdly, too. U-H-T, not U-T-H, but U-H-T-C-E-A-R-E, Utcare.
And that's when you can't, you have difficulty getting up because you just didn't get enough sleep.
You just didn't get enough sleep.
Okay, Utcare.
Yeah, what it actually means is that you're lying awake worrying about the day ahead.
Oh, no.
That's what it means. Yeah.
No, I am familiar with Utcare. Yeah. Everything seems worse when you're in bed.
I guess it's the silence that you can take it all in. And
the subconscious is rolling.
And man, I mean, you know, you get into that and you think, what in the hell am I thinking about that for?
Right. You know, you have a cup of coffee or whatever, and it starts to, the edge is gone. But, yeah, I do have Utcare.
Okay, now a few idioms about sleep.
Okay.
Kyle, what might you say when you couldn't go to sleep last night? There's a good old rock and roll song, I was...
Tossing and turning.
Tossing and turning.
Yeah.
And what if I ask you, did you sleep even a...
A wink?
Wink, yes.
Yeah.
What do you think a wink is?
Well, what, 40 winks is like the equivalent, supposedly, of a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I got my 40 winks. Mm-hmm. No, a wink, I mean, when you wink,
you'd think
you
that's
close
just
your eyes.
Seconds, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I never found anything that said what a wink was, but okay. They did talk about 40 winks. In his 1924 Saturday Evening Post article, F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote about a couple recently married. The husband is embarking on a long work project and wants his wife by his side for 40 days.
Okay.
He tells his distraught wife to simply take 40 winks, and when you wake up, everything will be fine. So I don't think it's 40 days. I mean, he didn't want her to sleep for 40 days.
Right.
I've always thought of it as good night's sleep, too.
Yeah, same here.
When you sleep soundly, what simile might you use? You sleep like a...
Sleep like a lamb? I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. What, you
wow,
sleep like,
they're
you
like,
sleep
a,
like a log?
Yeah, that's okay. And that's the one I want to talk about. But y'all sleep like a baby?
Yeah, that's right. But I always think of a baby waking up and crying.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of how I sleep these days. No.
You get Utcare.
Utcare.
Yeah. Yeah, but of course, I slept like a baby last night.
Yeah, and then also a couple that were mentioned were sleep like a rock, and I think I've heard that.
Yeah.
And then sleep like a top. And they explained it that after you spin a top, when it stops, it's down for good. But
well, that's true. I'd never heard that. But yeah.
But sleep like a log is a phrase that originates from the 1883 classic novel Treasure Island.
And see, I would have thought that it went way
back.
Yeah,
me too.
Hmm.
For those who wish you a good night's rest, they might hope that you sleep
well.
Yeah.
You're looking for something a little bit more
idiomatic.
Don't let the sleep tight. Don't
there
let the bed
go.
Bugs bite.
There
yeah.
you go. So, where do you think the sleep tight might come from?
That's a great question. Makes me think of being in a sleeping bag or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I was thinking like cuddled or swaddled or
right,
something.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's even weirder than that.
Okay.
In earlier times, people usually slept on mattresses supported by ropes that crossed over each other. So they're lifted off the floor.
Is that to stay away from vermin or
probably,
mud
yeah,
or something?
I'm thinking. If these ropes were left loose, they would cause the bed to be very uncomfortable.
It'd
feel insecure.
Okay.
So sleep tight is getting your ropes cinched up.
Gotcha.
An extension of this is saying, good night, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite.
Mm.
As a person who travels and sleeps in a lot of hotel rooms, this one creeps me out.
As a kid, I never got that because, like, what do I... Don't let them bite?
Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. This originates from mattresses back in the day being made of straw.
Mm-hmm.
If sleepers did not take proper precautions before settling down for the night, they would find themselves being attacked by bed bugs all night long. Or they went to the Motel 6, you know, whichever.
Right.
And how do you think this idiom meaning going to bed might be related to the last one? Hitting the hay. How is hitting the hay associated?
Well, okay, so if mattresses were made of straw or something, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So before crawling into this hay bed, right,
mm-hmm.
people would often hit the hay.
It was
actually
to chase?
Hit it.
to maybe make things get out of there?
Yes, to make sure there weren't any insects or critters cuddled up. Well, as a child visiting my grandmother on the lake, I learned to shake out my shoes when I woke up in the morning. Now, I hadn't thought about this until I started looking at these idioms, but entering slumber involves falling.
Yeah, you fall asleep,
You fall asleep, you drop off
right,
to sleep.
Right.
The literal usage, which uses the verb fall in the sense of succumb, dates back to about 1300. The figurative is several centuries newer. One writer guessed that it might be simply that sleep is characterized as something involuntary.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
generally when you fall, you're involuntary, right?
Right.
And overwhelming that all our bodies must relinquish to, much like falling in love.
Sure, it's beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You couldn't stop it if you wanted to.
Right.
A phrase that's not used too much these days, but popular when I was younger, is catching some Z's.
Right.
Now, where does that come from?
Well, I've got two thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Either somehow connected to Rip Van Winkle, the mm-hmm. old story about the guy who slept for, 100 years, 40 years?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or, like, old-time comic strips.
Comic books, that's where it comes
Snuffy
from.
Snuffy Smith or something, mm-hmm. if he was... Or Beetle Bailey, if they're sleeping, there are
mm-hmm.
Z's in front of them.
Right.
And I guess that's snoring?
Yes.
Maybe?
Okay. Yes, absolutely. And I think the Rip Van Winkle you're thinking about is probably after the comics adopted it.
Okay.
I'm guessing. When comics first appeared, showing that a character was sleeping was a bit of a challenge. Because, you know, you shut their eyes. Are they dead?
Right.
Or are they just
right.
resting? What?
Yeah.
So artists resorted to onomatopoeia. The sound of snoring was a nearly universal way to show that someone was sleeping.
Of course.
And Z's seemed to be the perfect fit, at least for English speakers. In French and Spanish, and I know you've heard of a lot of these things, like what does a pig sound like in France, you know?
Right.
In French and Spanish, the sound is often imitated by an R, ronchi, which... If you think about the way some people snore, like that. Polish and German speakers use CHRRRR, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Korean and Mandarin speakers use characters that translate to words I wouldn't even pretend to be able to pronounce.
Right.
But that always has fascinated me. Why does it sound like, is it characterized as sounding different in another language?
Hmm.
If you're not affected with dyspnea and you eventually have to get up.
Yes.
But what don't you want to do? You don't
want to get up on the wrong side of the bed.
Right, right. And that goes back to some kind of mythological belief about devils were on the wrong side of the bed. Okay, finally, Kyle, think about these two phrases. Sleep on it.
Okay.
Sleep it off.
Sleep on it means don't make a decision yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a night to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I don't think anyone wants you to think about it when you're sleeping.
No,
but
no.
It's just a length of time.
Although, you know, the scientists say that, like for studying, study late at night, and while you're sleeping, the memory collapses onto it, I guess.
And then
sleep it off.
Well, could be some sort of condition, whether you're angry, mm-hmm, frustrated, mm-hmm, or drunk, mm-hmm, just sleep it off.
Right, right. And it's interesting because on and off are usually antonyms.
Right.
But in these phrases, they really have nothing to do with
it.
Sleep
it
on and sleep on it and sleep it off. Although if you're worried about sleeping it off, you might want to sleep on it.
Right. Milton Grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
The Razorback Indoor Track and Field teams are back in Fayetteville this weekend. They will host the Razorback Invitational at the Randall Tyson Indoor Track on Friday and Saturday. The Arkansas men's tennis team will play Baylor and Nebraska Omaha in Fayetteville on Saturday. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith baseball team opens its season Friday afternoon at Texas A&M International. The Lions, picked to finish sixth in the Lone Star Conference, will play their first home game Friday, February 7th, against UT Tyler.
Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues the 65th season February 1st at Walton Arts Center. Sona musicians and special guest soloists perform the season's second Masterworks concert featuring Carl Orff's masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series presents Ballet Memphis Contemporary Times 3 on Thursday, February 6th, beginning at 7 p.m. Inspired by Memphis musical and literary heritage, this performance will include three original works by contemporary choreographers. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets and information. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Greenland. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Contributors today included Zuzanna Sitek and Antoinette Grajeda. Timothy Dennis mastered our show from the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherrods. Our conversations between Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette are recorded at the KATV studios in Little Rock and are part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can find out more at talkbusiness.net. Support for archival material heard on our show comes from the Women's Giving Circle at the University of Arkansas. And Antoinette Grajeda also finds music from our archives to help us close out many of our shows while reminding us of upcoming music performances. Today, we will finish up with Route 358 and their song Let It Burn, recorded for us exclusively inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The band will be at Black Apple Crossing in Springdale Friday Night Music, scheduled to begin at 8 o'clock. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. We're back tomorrow at 11, still an hour earlier. Up next on KUAF, coverage of the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. Here's Route 358.
No regrets, looking back when things seem good before. I locked the door and watched it burn. I'm on the run, not sure what from. What I've been through, there's not a guilty bone inside. Bruises heal, someday I'll feel some remorse, but I feel nothing now. Gasoline. Watch it burn. Pour the whiskey and tell it made him smile. Little flirting kept it flowing for a while. Let him down and I slowly slipped gone and never to return. door and watch him burn. Lock the door and watch him burn. Lock the door and watch him burn.